Birth Association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
Welcome to IndieBirth series of podcasts here on iTunes, Taking Back Birth. So today we have a really fun chat with somebody I consider a really good friend, even though we've never met. And her name is Ashley. She has an amazing, inspiring story for you all today. And I know it'll interest so many women listening because it is a free birth after cesarean. So we like to call them FBACs, as terrible an acronym as that may be. But it's actually not. It implies so much power and so much rawness. And you'll hear that in her experience. So again, for anybody that has had a cesarean, I think this is going to be amazing. So let's just jump right in. And here's Ashley. She's going to start by telling us a little bit about herself and just where she's coming from.
Hello. Okay, so I had my son, Asher. I had him in March of this year, March 11th. I was 16 months post-op from a cesarean.
That's another really exciting point.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a lot of people are scared even further along than that. And so I kind of had to look that in the eye and did my research, and I felt comfortable. And so it was awesome. And so, yeah, I had a cesarean in 2012. And it was kind of funny. I don't meet many women who have a home birth first, which I had a home birth in 2004, and then wind up with a cesarean after. So
yeah, that's really unique.
Yeah, it was hard for me because I knew what I missed out on. Because I knew that I, you know, what a home birth could be, and I lost that, and a lot of it was from the midwife that I chose to have. She was way too interventive, and, you know, looking back, I knew she would be. I think I was just too, there was a lot going on where I wasn't sure if I could change providers, and I kind of just went with it. So that's another big thing for me is, you know, women that I see that are like, oh, well, my provider is letting me or allowing me to blah, 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 and we're going to do trial of labor, you know, things like that. And it just brings me back to that where I'm just like, okay, well, I don't know. I wish that I would have changed my provider or not had one at the time. But, you know, needless to say, I kept on with her. And
now it wasn't the same, right? It wasn't the same midwife you had had for the first birth.
No, nope. My first midwife was awesome, and she was a CNM, and she had been doing home births for about 25 years. Super hands-off. I didn't see any equipment at all when she came to my house. She was just very cool. She did my laundry and made soup and, you know, like, did all this awesome stuff and left me completely alone for a lot of it, and was just, I felt very empowered during that birth. And I had my mom, who's a birth educator. She was there, my sister, and I had my husband and a best friend. And, you know, I just had a lot of support. And it was great. And it was long. It was 40 hours. She was posterior. She was born in the call, and, no tearing. It was awesome. It was great. So with Elizabeth, she was actually my surrogate baby. I was a surrogate in 2012. So with Elizabeth, she was posterior. She was the exact same weight as my daughter. You know, there was really nothing that would have made it so that I couldn't have her at home, really. I mean, there's really rare occurrences anyway that would make it that, but everything was pretty identical.
Yeah, you had proof too, which had that right. had to be really hard. You had proof that you could do it, and you could do it at home. And do you think you were, I mean, sort of naive in a sense, or like, you know, how did you get into the second situation? I mean, I'm guessing it's just, you know, you felt like, hey, I can totally do this. Nothing could go wrong after a first birth.
I think I was kind of led astray by my first birth, thinking that all, I think my biggest thing was that all midwives care about their clients. Mm-hmm. All midwives are birth trusting. I think that was where I was going wrong, thinking that, you know, it wasn't going to matter if she was there. It wasn't going to matter if she intervened because she had my best interest in mind. And I still hadn't taken responsibility for my own pregnancy or my own labor or anything. I was just like, oh, as long as she's there, you know, it's going to be fine. And it totally was not fine. And also I was kind of pigeonholed into who I was seeing because I was a surrogate and the family that I was caring for, they didn't feel comfortable with a CPM. Oh, they wanted a CNM. And so it was just kind of like, okay, what, you know, that's my trade-off. I had wanted to be a surrogate for so long and I'd met so many families, but I wanted to have a home birth and they were the only people that were cool with home birth as long as I had a CNM. So it was kind of a trade-off. Mm. And so I kind of felt stuck in that way. Even though, I mean, she had so many red flags, a lot of body negativity. She was telling me not to gain any weight. I weighed 150 pounds when I got pregnant. I wasn't even considered obese. And she told me not to gain a pound during my pregnancy.
Oh, my gosh. So there were signs for sure.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I made her stop weighing me at 7 months pregnant because I felt it was more detrimental to hear her telling me, you're going to wind up with a cesarean if you don't watch your weight, you know, things like that. And I was like, you know what? It's worse for me to hear you say that than it is for me to have an extra slice of pizza or, you know, whatever.
Well, and that's what women don't understand. I think that alone, you know, could really set someone free that's listening, which is if you choose somebody that doesn't hold your beliefs. And I mean, honestly, if they utter anything like that, that throws you off your path and into fear, it is that meaningful.
Right.
It is and that meaningful.
Just say no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't realize that I have the power to say no. Like, that was huge. You know, everybody gets kind of dragged into this whole hierarchy of you know, these doctors and midwives and people who you think know you better than you. And you don't realize that you can say no to them. They're not like the mafia, you know, they're not Gestapo, they're not, although sometimes it can go that way in the hospitals, but you can say no. And so I started, you know, kind of branching out. I felt bad, basically. I had to learn the hard way to speak up. I felt bad even to the point, like I didn't want to step on her toes. And even when my birth was like spiraling out of control, she convinced me to, you know, have a vaginal exam. And so I let her do a vaginal exam on me. I'd only been in labor for maybe 12 hours at that point, and I wasn't in transition yet. And she was kind of, it wasn't like a normal vaginal exam. I don't know what she was doing. And then all of a sudden my water broke and it just gushed and gushed. And I could have said no then. You know, there's so many times after this birth experience with her that led me to have a cesarean where I just kept thinking about all the times that I could have really said no. I could have made her get out of my house. I could have changed, you know, like, and I didn't want to make those mistakes again the second time.
Yeah. But like you said, too, I think when, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you don't accept responsibility, then you're just less likely to be in a place where you do say no, because ultimately there's that fear, I think, for so many women that what if what they want is wrong? What if it doesn't work out, you know?
Right. Like, what if I don't know what I'm doing?
Yeah. 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 She knows better than you. I mean, that's what people think.
Right. Yeah. And so, I just was very sheepish in that way. I didn't want to intrude. And even when I wanted her to leave my house so badly when she was at my house, even my husband even asked me. She kept like trying to take my blood pressure over and over and over, which you're not even supposed to do that. And she was using a cup that was too small.
Right.
I was not even in a position for a good reading, you know, and she just coming in and saying, oh, your pulse is really high. Is something bothering you? And I just kept looking at her like, yeah, actually something is bothering me. But I just still wouldn't say, get out of my house, you know? And that's what I was feeling that inside. And it got so, I keep thinking of it as being loud. Like everything was so chaotic around me that I couldn't hear my intuition. I couldn't hear that voice that was telling me what I needed to do. And so I was out of control, you know. And then after she broke my water, the pain was so bad that I just broke down fast. I broke down really fast. And I was scared because she had interfered. And, you know, and I knew the baby wasn't in the position that I wanted her to be in yet. And she, when my water was intact for a reason. I mean, it was, my daughter was born in the call. Like, my water never broke with her for a reason. And so I just, you know, I didn't feel safe anymore. And so when we transferred, you know, I was the screaming woman who went into the ER screaming for drugs. Something I never thought I would do, but in that moment it was pretty crazy. So I wound up with an epidural, fentanyl, oh, you name it, and the baby couldn't tolerate it. I couldn't tolerate it. And they wheeled me back, and I knew it was going to happen. As soon as it started happening, I just knew it. I didn't even cry. I just looked at my husband and I was like, I knew this was going to happen, you know? And that's when it really, that was like my moment where I realized that it is so crucial to listen to that voice. It is, in order for birth to be how it's going to be, like, you need to be able to hear that voice. If somebody's intervening, if somebody's trying to take control over what's going on with you, you're going further and further away from the perfectness of birth and what your body is supposed to do. You're intervening, you're disturbing. And so I realized then that had I listened to myself, and I had spoken up and I had taken control and I had taken responsibility, I wouldn't have been in that situation. And so that proved to me with my son, when I got pregnant 6 months later, that through that next pregnancy, it was amazing. I had complete control over my pregnancy. It felt so awesome to not have to go be poked and prodded by anyone. Nobody was weighing me. I didn't even weigh myself. I focused more on my, you know, just eating right and eating what I wanted to eat and not worrying about, you know, much. I processed a lot of fears, but it was totally different. And I just kept telling people, like, I feel so free, you know, like I felt so free to just do whatever I needed to do and to really, really listen to my intuition. It was right on, like, it's something that kept building and building, and my trust was building in it too. And after about 20 weeks, I got to the point where I trusted myself more than anybody else.
That's so awesome. You know, I think that's something that really needs to be highlighted for women listening too, that, you know, so many women out there can't imagine having even a vaginal birth after cesarean, much less a free birth. But what I think isn't being communicated is it takes a lot of work to get from the place you were in after that cesarean to wanting to take care of yourself. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's something that happens through the course of a pregnancy, and it takes a lot of work. And I know how hard you worked on all of your fears. And anyway, I just wanted to highlight that, you know, it's not like you were just like, oh, that birth was terrible. Now I'm just going to do this.
No, it was definitely a process. And I found that I'm more sympathetic to women who aren't completely trusting in their bodies yet. I can tell who they want to be, but it's hard. You know, it's hard. I had an ultrasound at 20 weeks. And so for me, that was the turning point where I was like, okay, I really need to trust myself fully or I'm not going to do it at all. You know, like I had, you know, people had cut me open and had taken my uterus out and done crazy things, you know, and it was for me, I trusted my body, but I didn't trust them. And I had to see, like, my mind just had to see what was there. And so after that, it was.
So people know you wanted an ultrasound to check for placental placement, right?
Yeah. And I just wanted to see my uterus. Mm-hmm. And it was really strange. Like, once you. Even whatever, you know, a few months ago, it's intact. I don't know what I was like seeing crazy things in my head, you know, like I had to know. And if I were to ever get pregnant again, I wouldn't need to see that again. But I did for that time, you know, and I'm totally okay with that, because had I not gotten that done because of my own personal situation, I know I would have transferred out of fear during labor. And that's just something that I had to do. And so I did it. I mean, like, ultrasound, and after that I was good. So
I think that's really cool for people to know too. You know, it's not like this crazy, you know, hippie thing that women do, you know, just go to have their baby in a teepee. Like, there's lots of intelligent choices. There's lots of education. And sometimes we do testing and, you know, minor intervention because we have to, because that's what our situation requires. And I think that is so empowered. That's the definition of an empowered choice.
Right, right. And I totally agree. You know, like, I think that the biggest thing with free birth is, and just being an independent person when you're pregnant, is just taking those reins and listening to yourself. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you want to do, and you've researched it, and you have knowledge about everything, your choice.
Yeah, totally. Hey, it's cutting out a little bit. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, there you are. Yeah, I mean, I think it's not, letting anybody on any extreme influence you, because really people that say, oh, there should be none of that, no lab testing, no ultrasound, they're no better than the medical world that are telling you should do it their way. Right. It's about doing it your way.
Right, right. You should just listen to yourself, and you're the only person that knows your pregnancy. You're the only person that knows your baby and how to birth your baby, and it's all you. So having anybody else make those choices for you just doesn't make any sense. So that's what I did. And
what else did you do, you know, for quote unquote prenatal care? We talk so much about that here on these podcasts, and I just love for women to hear what that means to different people. Yeah.
So it was a long process of letting go of the need to, for me, prenatal care, like clinical prenatal care, is what I started out doing with myself. I started doing urinalysis. I started taking my blood pressure, which I actually continued that occasionally throughout the entire pregnancy. Just because I was a little hypertensive at the end of Elizabeth's pregnancy, but you know, I did that. If I felt like something was off, I would check that. I would check my blood pressure just to see, oh, okay, so that's what it's like when my blood pressure is up, you know? So that was one thing that continued. The urinalysis strips I stopped doing because they totally confused me. I thought I saw signs of a UTI, even though I had no symptoms whatsoever. And I actually went to urgent care to get an antibiotic for a UTI that I didn't even have. So that was confusing. And I found that a lot of times those things are just more work than they're worth, you know? And so.
Well, it's a lot. I mean, you have to know a lot. And even then, you can screw up. I mean, to essentially do your own medical care in pregnancy. Right. So, yeah, I agree. It can make you more crazy than it's worth, especially if you're just a healthy person.
Yeah. And that's the other thing that I kept thinking too is, you know, how much of this would I be doing if I wasn't pregnant? You know, what makes being pregnant all of a sudden I have to like check all these things and be scared and, you know, like have all these things done to me, when it's like, I'm just a, you know, in what other time of my life would I continue to go see a doctor on a monthly or biweekly or weekly basis when I wasn't sick?
Right.
And test myself for all these things that, you know, I could or could not have. And it's just, it just kind of got ridiculous. So I stopped doing, I kind of let go slowly. And after the ultrasound, I was done, basically. Like, I didn't do any more urinalysis strips. I didn't check my blood. I did check my blood sugar before, but I don't know why. I think I was just curious. I never did a blood panel. Never did any blood work at all. Let's see. I don't even know. I didn't. That's pretty much it. That was the extent of my self-care, prenatal care the whole time. The stuff that I did that wasn't clinical was really important. I did a lot of meditation, and I had a lot of conversations with birth trusting people. I realized that I had kind of cut out a lot of people in my life. I was pregnant who were not birth trusting, just because I was at home, my whole space. So to kind of create a bubble, and I dove into all the indie birth stuff. I don't know.
Whatever.
Yeah. So I got really heavy into it, and just releasing a lot of my fear. It was so good to be able to read and listen to all your stuff, and you were 6 weeks ahead of me would ever. So every time
that's how we became friends first. Yeah, I forgot.
Yep, yeah. Because every time you had a podcast, I was like, oh, she posted another one. And I wanted to listen to the whole thing, and we were so close in weeks. So it was really cool. So I followed you like all Escher's pregnancy, but yeah. So I did a lot of internal stuff, and you know, for a long time I played with the whole like. I remember I was about 16 weeks, and I was thinking, okay, so if I did go to get a midwife now, I could still play it off like, oh, I just haven't found anyone yet. And it was probably about 22 weeks when I was like, okay, that's not going to fly. Yeah, I either have to commit or, you know, whatever crap or get off the pot. So
yeah.
I finally did, and I was like, okay, no more. I didn't second guess myself after that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, and my husband was amazing.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about him because I think a lot of people wonder how to get the partner on board with what they really believe, and that's for women that you know may have not had a traumatic experience like you did.
Yeah, and he was in the OR with me when I through that, and it was just crazy. And he also saw what it did to me emotionally afterward. I mean, the depression that I felt after my cesarean was insane. And I think part of it had to do with I came home from a hospital without a baby, you know, I was a surrogate, and then I lost my birth, and I lost my, you know, like my uterus had been cut open, and I was just so devastated. And he had to walk me through that, you know. He saw all those things, but when it came to being alone during my pregnancy this time and doing self-care, I remember I was probably about 6 weeks pregnant, and I was looking at care providers, and I was just like, you know what, none of this feels right. I don't want to do this again. And so he came home from work, and I was like, hey, what do you think about me not having a midwife for this whole pregnancy? And he was making dinner, and he was like, okay, that sounds good to me. And I was like, oh my God, I love you. So it was awesome through the whole pregnancy. He was so great. He even listened to like the indie birth class, and he was, you know, really digging into stuff, and he knew exactly what my fears were, and he worked with me on it. And so he was the biggest supporter. And when I went into labor, for whatever reason, every contraction I had, he had to be kind of, I was on all fours. He had to be straddling me and putting his fists into my sacrum and pushing as hard as he possibly could down toward the floor. Oh, so my husband weighs like 135 pounds. He's small. But he was like lifting his entire body up and like pushing down on my sacrum. And he did this I was in labor for 2 days. So this is what he was doing for 2 days.
Oh my gosh. He's amazing too.
So yeah, he was awesome. So he, you know, he did that, and at one point in my labor, because I had called you a couple times, I needed a lot of support this labor because I was battling with a lot of stuff that I thought I let go, but it was still there. It was like the fears were still clinging on, but I wanted to stay home so bad, and I just kept going, you know, let's just transfer to the hospital, you know? And then this voice inside of me was like, no, don't do it. You know, it was just so, I don't know. I doubted it. And I had doubt and I had fear and I had all these things. And I kept telling him that I wanted to go, but I didn't really. And he was like, well, why don't we try to call someone else? You know, like, why don't we do this first? And he kept like postponing the trip to the hospital, which was perfect.
Well, that's the mark of, you know, I think a great birth attendant, even in a sense, you know, not to prolong an emergency, but he knew it wasn't anything real. I mean, you would have known if there was something wrong.
Definitely.
So,
yeah.
I mean, but emotional stuff is big.
Mm-hmm. And he knew that I needed a little bit of a distraction and I needed some time, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, he bought me some time, and then he, you know, suggested calling one of my very, very, very good friends who, you know, I called her at 2 o'clock in the morning and I asked her if she was ready to come over, and she was like, let me get pants on. I'll be right there. So she was, by my side, and, she's amazing. She's had free birth too, and she's pregnant again, and with baby number 5, and she's doing another free birth. So, so she was the perfect supporter for me. She was amazing, and it was just so emotional. Like when I finally, he slipped into the birth canal. I could feel him during one of my contractions, and.
How long was it that you were in labor before you felt that?
So I was in labor for over. I don't know. I had pre-labor. I was in labor for like 4 weeks, it felt like. but like the really hard labor that I couldn't sleep through the contractions, and it was, and they didn't stop. Mm-hmm. It was about 32 hours.
Wow.
And then I pushed for 15 minutes, which was phenomenal. So I pushed for 3 hours with my daughter when she was born in the call. So 15 minutes was cake compared to that.
Yeah.
But it was super intense. Like he, so we went through the whole birth. And oh, so what I wanted to say too is that I was scared to push. And so I was holding back my entire birth. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was. It was so bad that, you know, when you have to pee really bad and you're like trying to lean over to the side, so you're crossing your legs and you don't want to pee. I was doing that during contractions.
Yeah. So what like, did that mean to you? What were you feeling?
I needed to let go. Mm-hmm. I really needed to let go. I needed to just face it. I needed to face any of my fears, my fear of pain, my fear of failure, my fear of losing him, you know, because I went through such grief after Elizabeth went home to Pennsylvania that I had a taste of loss. Like I had to go through therapy for infant loss and grief. And I had the empty arms feeling, and I had this, I wouldn't let anybody leave my side. You know, it was so dark and so hard to go through after that. And I was very alone because I didn't have a lot of people that were in my situation as a surrogate, sure, you know, like I didn't really even know anyone. Mm-hmm. And so I knew grief and loss mamas, but, you know, there didn't really fit either. I didn't feel. Mm-hmm. So it was hard. But and, you know, it's interesting that they were the most, like I had 3 friends that had experienced a great loss with losing a child or stillbirths. They were the first people in line to say, your grief is valid. You know, like you did lose a child, and we love you, and we're here. And so I had support in that way, which was really important for me. But I think during that time when I was going to push Escher, I didn't want to go through that ever again. And so I was going to push him out, and I was scared, and no one knew that who was at my birth. No one knew. So everybody's, you know, supporting me every contraction and, you know, offering suggestions. And that's how I had them phrase it is, Ashley, do you feel like you want to go to the bathroom? Ashley, do you feel like you want to do this? Instead of, you should do this,
yeah.
You know? So it would give me the opportunity to be like, let me check with myself. No, I don't want to do that. So that was cool. But I knew that I knew it was going to have to come out, but I knew I was afraid and I was going to have to tell them because they were getting exhausted. And they were doing all these things, and I just knew that I could do it. I just had to get over the fear. And so I finally just blurted out, I know why he's not coming out. And Pat was like, you know, my husband was like, why? And I was like, because I'm scared, and I know that if I squat, I know he's going to come out faster. And then they were like, oh, well, okay, well, are you going to squat? And I was like, no, but I'm really scared. So we went into the bathroom, and I was sitting on the toilet, and I like grabbed this little pillow, which was like whatever kind of ritual I was doing. I had a pillow off of my bed that I had to keep holding in whenever I had a contraction. So I sat on the toilet. This is in between contractions, and I was like, okay, I know it's going to happen. And I'm scared. And so my husband was holding my hands, and I looked up at my friend Sammy, and I was like, okay, so 60 seconds, that's all the bravery I need to have right now, right? And she was like, yep, 60 seconds, because that's how long my contractions were lasting. And so I was like, okay, I think I can do that. And so I sat on the toilet, and I had this insane contraction, and my water broke. So my water, I didn't realize that it was mech in meconium staining in the water, but it was. And that could have totally thrown me, but it didn't at all. It was just kind of whatever. You know, I've been in labor for a long time. It is what it is. So I didn't get scared of that. But then after that, everything started progressing and I was letting it happen. I was squatting. I was doing things like that. I got really tired and I went into my room, laid down, and I fell asleep for like 5 seconds. And I woke up to this insane contraction. And I was by myself at that time. And I remember my friend Sammy was saying, you know, why don't we leave you alone and you can do your own thing? We don't have to be here. And I was like, okay, cool. So they left me and I was by myself. I got that insane contraction and I started breathing through it and I couldn't breathe through it. It was just so intense. And all of a sudden I felt him just like fly into my birth canal. And I got up on all fours and I called everyone in. And you know, my friend Sammy was just so awesome because she was saying things like, do you want us? We do not need to be in here. You can do this. You know, like if you want to be on your own, just say the word. And I just said, I want you to be in here. And so I pushed, for 15 minutes and it was like my body was pushing and my body was completely taking over and there was nothing I could do. And as I was pushing, like this blizzard came and I was super aware of all these things that were happening. And the most, you know, emotional thing that was happening is that my friend, who was very aware of my last birth and the pain and the suffering that happened afterward, she was holding me up, like supporting me literally. But she was also saying things like, you're doing it, Ashley. You are a warrior. You are a goddess. Just saying these things as I was pushing. And you're going to meet your baby and you are fabulous. You are a rock star. You are just saying all these things. And so when he was born, it was just, I turned around and I picked him up and, you know, it wasn't even like, I just knew him, you know, and it was just, it was so different. This experience was just so different. And it took me a few minutes to have, like, to realize what I had just done. And then I laid back and I cried and I just thanked everybody for not letting me go to the hospital because I had wanted to go. I had seemingly wanted to go so bad before. But yeah, it was incredible. And then I didn't get out of bed for 2 weeks. So,
that's amazing. I mean, yeah. You totally faced your fears. And I think, you know, when you say you wanted to go to the hospital, like I've certainly felt that way at various points during my birth and lots of women do. And, you know, I mean, the truth is lots of women do go to the hospital and that can be, of course, for a gazillion different reasons. But, you know, if we're talking about a reason or a situation where nothing is actually physically wrong, I think it's just, you know, highlighting for women too, that can be really normal. And it doesn't mean that you should always stay home. It just means that our fears and our emotions are such a part of birth that we have to know that. And we do all the work we can do before, just like you did, but we have to accept that things do crop up in the birth and we have to be connected enough to say, you know, what is this? Is this me being scared or is there something wrong?
Right. And so when Escher was born, that was another thing that happened was that his breathing was not, he wasn't breathing. We had given him some time to try to breathe and he was having a really hard time inhaling. And so he was making a lot of gurgled noises. So I was doing some inverted poses with him and trying to help like postural drainage. And he still wasn't doing it. So we were like milking his cord down and I never felt that we needed to call anyone. I didn't feel fear, really. I felt some concern. And so, you know, I sucked his nose and mouth out with my mouth and, like, spit it out on the bed next to me. I did that a couple times. And, you know, I just gave a couple breaths. And he totally came around. He was breathing. And so when I told my mom this story, of course, she was, you know, just freaking out. But I didn't feel that, you know. No, and I know that if I would have felt an actual need to go somewhere, I would have. And the same with the hospital, like how you were saying that a lot of women, you know, get to that point where they're like, I can't do this. You know, like that's a very, you know, common thing for women to say in labor. And so that was my way of, I can't do this. I want to go to the hospital, you know. And so there was a huge difference between that and the way that I felt when I was in labor with Elizabeth. And I want like I needed to go to the hospital because I was not going to give birth with that midwife here. And things were going chaotic at that point. So I knew the difference, and I knew I didn't really, and if I really would have wanted to go to the hospital, no one would have been able to stop me.
Yeah. Yeah. And also I think it sounds to me, like if you had had somebody there, you probably would have ended up at the hospital, don't you think, if they had heard you say that, or just because it took, you know, a decent amount of time for a third baby. I mean, you know why it took that long, but rules and regulation wise, you probably would have been toasted.
Especially because I didn't mention this, but my contractions never regulated the entire labor. I mean, up until the point that he came in, that he came into the world, I was having contractions that were anywhere from 30 seconds to 10 minutes apart. Right. I mean, the whole time, I had no idea where I was in labor because I had been so focused on, okay, this is the normal, you know, the normal progression of labor is that it's going to get closer together, and you know, I know what transition feels like. I never hit those, you know, like that didn't happen. So,
well, and that's really common, I mean, in a sense, because most of us don't have textbook labors, you know, and on paper, you know, we call that dysfunctional labor, which is hilarious. But when, you know, somebody else is there and their butt is on the line and you're not following a predictable pattern, it's just not good. For
especially
you.
For someone, you know, I would be convincing everyone that I could do this and I'm a VBAC, you know, 6 months postpartum. So I absolutely would have wound up having to, you know, go to the hospital. I mean, they would have totally transferred me. And Janet, the midwife that I had when I was pregnant with Elizabeth and I was in labor, you know, she was operating totally from a place of fear, because I kept saying things like, she told me that I was 10 centimeters and I could just push the baby out whenever I wanted, and, you know, telling me all these things. And I had no urge to push whatsoever. And I was just so confused. I just kept envisioning, like, this super thin cervix and the baby's head was right there. And why wasn't she coming out? And I was having so much pain. And when I brought that up to her, she was like, well, we call this obstruction of labor, and
and the
that's what I call her, you know. but we call this obstruction of labor. We're going to need to transfer. So I didn't have anybody doing that this time. Everybody was kind of just following my lead and really supporting me and letting me make the decisions, and it was awesome. And I also learned that, you know, I had always pictured it just being my husband and I and my 9-year-old here. And that didn't go down like that. And that's okay. You know, like I had to phone a friend and I had to phone a couple friends.
But that's the meaning of support. And that's, you know, I get on my little soapbox about these things, but you can never repeat the same thing too many times if you really care about it. And one of my things is that people think unassisted birth or free birth means you're like alone in a closet somewhere and you don't have any help and nobody cares about you. And you're just like, you know what? It couldn't be farther from the truth, especially in a story like yours, where you were supported by love, and not alone at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was free. I was still free to make those choices, you know? And I was talking about it after I had him, and I never liked the term free birth. I always thought it was like really hokey or, I don't know, corny or something. So I never really used it. And I was always like, oh, I'm doing unassisted for anybody that I told, you know, like I'm unassisted. But after his birth, I finally realized like how awesome that word is.
It is.
I was saying to someone, like, I wasn't walking around going, oh, man, I feel so unassisted right now. Like, I was thinking, oh, my God, it feels so good to be free, you know? And that's why free birth is just, I don't know, it's phenomenal. So
that's a beautiful way of saying it. And, yeah, I think it certainly means different things to different people, but I'm with you on the unassisted. I mean, I get it, you know, whatever. People can do whatever they want. But I agree, just from a personal and emotional standpoint, I think free birth means a lot to me too.
Definitely. And then with when you say unassisted, it's like, you know, you're missing something.
Well, it's like saying the norm is assisted, and somehow you're the weirdo that's unassisted.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the norm is assisted. We know that, but yeah. Well, another thing you said too that I think is just really something I'd love for people to keep in mind is, you know, free birth or not is not really the point. It's just not being surrounded by fear. So, you know, hire a midwife if that's what you want to do. Hire a traditional birth attendant. Have a friend there. But make sure you surround yourself with people that are not going to be adding fear to your environment. And then your story is just like the perfect example of that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was a lot of fear coming from the midwife that had attended my birth with Elizabeth. There was a ton of fear. And then we got to the hospital and she totally took off.
Well, people don't understand that, though. Like, I think they think that's going to go away when they feel that during the prenatal period, you know, somebody being overly cautious. That's called fear in most cases, you know, if you're not. Yeah. So it's not going to go away if that's how they operate and that's how they view birth. It's like I want to ask women to, when they interview people, to get an honest answer to, you know, what do you think about birth? Because if people could be really honest, I think most people would respond with, well, it can be really scary. So I better be there for you.
Right. And, you know, it was just so nice knowing who was there. I was so, so, so picky about if I was going to call somebody. I had to know them inside and out. And really, that's, you never know that with, and especially if you're in the hospital and you have an OB, it could be any OB on staff, you know, and you don't even know that person. They don't know you. It's just so different. And then I learned a lot about midwifery in that, you know, it doesn't really matter. The letters behind a person's name don't matter. It's who they are that's important and what fears they have and their experiences and their viewpoints and all those things. And that's not something you can get from a 10-minute, you know, a 10-minute conversation with an OB at your appointment, you know, a lot of times. So, you know, I just learned a lot about that. And so, I don't know, it was just really, really intense and empowering and the coolest thing I think I've ever done. And now I can tell Escher his birth story and just be like really proud that I stuck it out. And not even that I wound up with a vaginal birth, but because I called those shots and I was responsible for my birth and fear stopped me. I trusted my birth, you know, and so that's everything that I wanted, and I got it, but I have to take the reins in order to get that, so.
Yeah, that's the best message. Take the reins to your own birth, and thank you so much. I think your story is just so beautiful, and we will certainly link to the written birth story from this podcast so people can read every word and get the whole entire thing. Any last bits you want to say, or, you know, anything you want to leave women with who are listening and contemplating a free birth or contemplating even just a vaginal birth after cesarean?
That you can do it. you can take control. You know, it's hard when you have a partner who doesn't really trust birth as much as you might, but getting them on board, it's worth showing them statistics. It's worth getting them into researching with you because it's an amazing thing. And, you know, I want this experience for women, not just vaginal birth, but I realize that birth means something and your birth can be amazing and your birth can be powerful. And you own yourself, and you can say no to whoever you need to say no to. And it's your body, your baby, and your birth. So I think those are pretty important things to know for sure.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. Your baby, your body, your birth. Wise words, Ashley. Wise words. Well, thank you so much. I think we'll wrap it up on that note.
Okay.
On a very high note. And thanks for listening, everyone. Check out indiebirth.com for more information on our 5-week online series, as well as all of our podcasts. And we'll catch you again soon.